yo, check. Look. Tickety check it, brought the soul back to the home team. Motown, why can't you see my team is supreme? Diana, welcome to the solar system of the forces. You running in a circle, we just chewing on your orbit.
Forfeit, fork it over. Heimlich maneuver. Me and my niggas will make the cut like Ryu. How you boost a future brighter than whatever you could imagine. Imagine the forces with you, running the rep like arachnids. Tarantulas, say legged, gargantuous animal, cause the maximum damage with my tongue and an animal.
While we be focused on our salary, lettuce and bring the croutons. I'm trying to have a dollar bill salad right on Obama's lawn. Let you be the pawn with my niggas playing hooky while my paper double triple like LeBron as a rookie.
I'm feeling better than the veterans. I use the booth as my pulpit. I'm a reverend. Chuch. On the road where you can find us, not gassed up. The shit is $4, so we avoid pumps. We serving rappers like they ordered it till we post on blogs, post up and loiter in.
The story ends, Wells begins, and I flip the page. In the park shooting jumpers while others was flipping yay. No Cartiers, couple of J's and reading comics. Could've label me a nerd with slam bitches in the closet. Awesome, left the city early, they forgot I'm not. Come from two worlds, but the city know I got them. Went from smelling crack smoker that busted house at our neighbors. They're really seeing black folk, the only nigga turning their papers.
Yo, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Span Report Podcast. I'm your host, Mr. Span, and this is episode number 22 of the report. Yeah, man, trying to keep this shit consistent. I got a lazy, quiet Sunday afternoon going on here, chilling out at the crib with my dog Tyrone. Yeah, the dog, this is Chihuahua, and his name's Tyrone. He moved in with my girl. That's my girl's pet, Chihuahua, long hair Chihuahua. And if any of you guys follow me on Instagram, you may have seen pictures of him sitting in my lap while I was at my desk, I guess checking his email or just being nosy. But right now, Tyrone's just sitting off in the corner, laid the fuck out, knocked out. You know, sometimes this dog acts as if he's worked three shifts because he sleeps the vast majority of the day. But it's cool with me, though. It's cool with me because Tyrone is probably one of the most chill dogs I've ever seen in my life. So, yeah, me and Tyrone, we fucks with each other, even though he's kind of made me his bitch because, you know, you have to pick up after your pets when you take them outside to go do their business or whatever. So I've been reduced to picking up shit after the dog takes a shit, so to speak. So, yeah, man. But we chilling. It's a Sunday. And today's drink of choice is a double shot of Grand Marnier with a tropical orange V8 splash juice. And this shit's pretty good. I fucks with the Grand Marnier. That and Crown Royal Black has become like two of my favorite drinks now. I've kind of gone back to some of the dark liquors before. Like, as a matter of fact, when I first started drinking, I would drink what my uncles were drinking, you know, because I couldn't afford to buy shit. So if they were drinking Hennessy, I was drinking Hennessy. And if they were drinking Remy Martin, I was drinking Remy Martin. It wasn't until I got to college that I started, you know, messing with some of the lighter drinks like the Bacardi. I started drinking Belvedere real heavy. I remember when Belvedere was really popular, I hopped on that. As a matter of fact, that kind of reminds me of when I turned 22. I was 22 years old, and for my birthday, they bought me a fifth of Belvedere. And the challenge was, I had to drink a shot for every year that I was alive. So I was up for the challenge. At least I thought I would be. I was up for it. And really, like, that birthday, I was surrounded by a bunch of hard legs, really. I didn't really do much for my 22nd birthday. We was in the backyard in my grandma's garage. It was a pool table in the garage, so a bunch of the guys just playing pool, we playing chess, and we're drinking. And I'm on the chessboard, and I'm whooping ass. Like, I think I got about maybe four or five guys just up off the chessboard. Like, I was in my mode. I kept drinking shots of this Belvedere. You couldn't tell me shit. And so I get up to like maybe my 16th shot. I got up to 16 shots. And I'll never forget it. It was this guy that used to live next door to us. Guy named, I forgot his fucking name. God rest his soul, because he's passed on. I hate that I can't remember his name right now. But he finally got me up off of the chessboard. And as soon as I stood up, that was all she wrote. Because I went down like a fucking tree in the forest. As soon as I stood my ass up to get up off that chessboard because of all of the shots of Belvedere I had been drinking. But and I never forget it because I went to the alley. It was an alley, and the Chicago police pulled up while I was in the middle of throwing up. And I just told them, "Yo, officer, you know, it's my birthday." And they're like, "Well, just get your ass in the house and drink responsibly." But I didn't take any more shots after that. I was pretty much done after that. And I passed out something pretty strong. I think I might have been out for a good 12, 13 hours after drinking the Belvedere. But that wasn't even where I wanted to go with that. But yeah, I just drifted off into that story. But yeah, today I'm drinking on the Grand Marnier and V8 Splash Tropical Orange Juice. So if you fucks with me, you can fuck with this Grand Marnier and this Tropical Orange Juice V8 Splash. It's pretty good. Today's show, though, I'm going to talk about a few things. I had some random thoughts that were going through my mind. And then I want to talk about a couple different things, man. I want to talk about home ownership, and I want to talk about, are black people naturally conspiracy theorists? These are a couple things that have just kind of been on my mind a little bit lately. And part of it is because of the things that, the things that I've been dealing with as far as, moving and things like that. And it also ties into the work that I do. Okay. And I want to just, I guess, dive right on into this as far as home ownership, because as you guys know, I still live in an apartment, man. I believe in apartment living. I don't have any problem with apartment living. And one of the things that I've been, I hear a lot because of the work that I do and because of the income that my job provides, a lot of people tend to think that, I should look into buying a house or buying a home. And since my girlfriend lives with me now, she's, I'm not saying she's pushing me towards trying to buy a house or anything like that, but I noticed that she watches a lot of HGTV, a lot of shows on Bravo, stuff like that. And a lot of the shows that she's really into are shows House Hunters, first time home buyers, stuff like that, Brother versus Brother, Love It or List It, shows like that show people going through the processes of buying homes. And one of the things, as also a few guys on the crew that I work with at the job that are also going through the processes of buying homes. And so one of the things that I've been thinking about, and I'm pretty sure I'm not the only one who thinks this way, but one of the things I've been thinking about is whether or not we've oversold this American dream that home ownership is what you should aspire to. Now, I remember part of the reason why I grew up in Detroit was because my grandfather owned about 5 homes here in the city of Detroit. Well, he owned 5 homes in Detroit. And at first, the homes were supposed to be homes for each of his 5 kids. He had bought homes for every last, he had 5 kids. He bought houses for all of them. And it didn't work out that all 5 kids ended up living in the houses that my grandfather bought. I think my mom lived in 2, and my aunt Denise, she lived in 1 before she moved to Las Vegas. So my uncles didn't bother moving into any of the houses. So what ended up happening was my grandfather would rent the houses out, and my mother ended up pretty much just being the landlady. She collected the rents and stuff like that. Now, I could see where he thought, okay, I can make this. If my kids aren't going to take advantage of this that I've set up for them, then I can make some money off of this. And what ended up happening was he would instead, he started leasing out to Section 8 recipients. And so, he was able to make money off of that, by just being able to take these houses, make them, pretty much rental properties, and generate some income off of that. And that, I believe, was a smart thing to do, considering the fact that none of my, out of the 5 kids, only 2 out of the 5 actually lived in any of the homes that he bought. But, you know, lately, you know, again, like I said, I just recently moved. I live in the burbs, in an apartment complex in the burbs, a pretty nice apartment complex, I would think so. But, yeah, like I've heard people say that, you know, because of the income that I'm able to get from the work that I do, that I should probably look into buying a home. And again, I also said that, you know, a couple of guys that I work with are also in the processes of buying homes and everything else. But I wonder, again, if that home ownership dream is the American dream. I wonder if that's like a fallacy. I wonder if that's just something we are like told from the time we're growing up, that you should always want to own your own home. And yeah, a lot of people wanted to own their own home so much so that the housing bubble blew up. You had people buying homes that they couldn't afford. You have people that are underwater in their mortgages where they owe more money on the house than the house is worth. You had a lot of people that were getting homes, no money down, credit shot to shit. And, you know, they were asking for the government to kind of help them get out of that situation. You know, so that's part of what the great, I wouldn't say recession, but the great, what would they call it? I guess it would be the Great Recession, because it wasn't a depression, but the Great Recession, a lot of that stemmed off of this implosion of the home, you know, the home market. But as I'm, you know, I'm watching these shows with my girlfriend, and you know, I'm talking to people at work, and I honestly don't necessarily know if like home ownership is a dream of mine anymore. You know, I was talking to one of the guys because he was having trouble with the bank, you know, getting the paperwork right, or there would be something with the appraisal on the house that he was buying, that or there would be some maintenance that needed to be done on the home before they could sell it. I mean, it was just a lot of different little things that were popping up that were keeping him from just being able to just outright buy the home, move in, get everything set up and everything else. And there was a couple guys that were having these type of issues, so much so that they felt like they had to go consult attorneys to make sure that they weren't being screwed out of these deals to buy these homes. And I just kind of wondered whether or not it was even worth the trouble. Also, I also wondered, like, well, you know, even though I make decent money, I kind of feel like I want to spend my money on what I want to spend it on type thing. And so if I want, like, say for instance, if the water heater supposedly goes out, that money doesn't come out of my pocket when I'm renting. I pay the rent and the rent's paid on time. They have to fix that. If the toilet is backed up, I mean, I can take a plunger to it, but if there's something more serious than that, I don't have to come out of my pocket to have that fixed. The apartment complex has to get that fixed, or whoever I'm renting from, they have to get that fixed. Part of my rent's paid for that. If I want to go swimming, there's a swimming pool in my complex. If I want to go swimming, I don't have to pay to maintain for the cost of a pool. I can just go over there and take a dip if I so choose to. So like, you know, just like general maintenance. And then on top of that, man, with the type of work that I do, and with the type of weather that we have here in Michigan, I know I don't want to come home from work and rake leaves. But if I was a homeowner, yeah, that's probably something I would have to do. I know that I don't want to come home after work and shovel snow. I know this. If I was owning my home, I would probably have to do that. Even, and so there are some instances where, like, if the sidewalks are cracked in front of your home, if somebody trips and falls on that sidewalk, you could be held liable for that. And so I always wondered whether or not the dream of home ownership was even worth it when you think about all of the additional monies that you put into just saying that you own a home. And then to add on top of that, I don't necessarily think that people really and truly own their homes. I mean, when you think about taxes, you know, property taxes and things like that, you could have paid off your mortgage and don't have any more housing payments to make. But let you fall behind on the taxes on that home that you've already paid for, and your home can be taken away from you. Your home can be put up for auction. Some people, when they fall behind in their in other financial aspects, you know, they'll refinance, or they'll put another, a second mortgage on a home that they've already paid for. So now you don't own your home again. Somebody else owns your home, and you're paying to get this money, the ownership of your home back because you needed this money. So I always wonder whether or not, well, not always wonder, but it's becoming more of a thing that I think about, that whether or not home ownership is the, you know, by it being the American dream, is it just a dream that we're being sold to be slaves of debt? You know, to be constantly owing someone, you know, even though you can tell people, yeah, I own my home, or if you're still in the process of paying, you know, house notes and things of that nature, that you still don't own it. You know, you may, you're renting to own, and then once you do own it, you have to pay someone else to maintain your ownership. So do you really own your home? And that was something I was thinking about, man. I wonder how many other people have, you know, had these similar thoughts. Because, you know, like I said, I was watching, it was this one episode, kind of caught my attention, where there was a couple, they were buying a home. It wasn't in America, though. They were buying a home in one of the tropical islands, and they wanted to pay cash for the house. But they were, even with them having the money, they were having so many issues just being able to just pay for the house straight out cash up front. You know, there was like just processes that made it so hard for them to do that it was like, shit, I almost wonder why people even bother. Now, I know that's probably just a personal thing for me, but I wonder how many other people were thinking about that also. So that's just one of the things that's been on my mind, man. Is home ownership pretty much overrated? I believe it is, but I mean, obviously there are a lot of people that don't. You know, I got a friend right now who had a larger home. He just went out and said fuck it and cashed out on a smaller home, and he's happy with his decision, and I'm happy for him, you know, and that's good. But you know, now with my situation, with me and my girl being, you know, a little bit more serious than we are, this is something that I'm going to really have to think about, because I know she's going to eventually want a home, and right now I'm not really feeling the whole home ownership thing. So that was one thing that was on my mind, man. And another thing, man, this is kind of it's kind of funny to me, and I'm wondering how many other people would probably think about this shit too, but how long after taking a shit is it safe for you to take a shower? Because me and my girl, we was having a conversation, and we were talking about how regular I am. Like, I'm pretty much on a schedule. You can pretty much set your clock to my schedule when it comes to when I have to go use the restroom. And just typically when I wake up in the morning, that's probably the first thing I do. When I come home from work, because I refuse to do it at work, if I can absolutely stand to, I won't do it at work. But when I come home from work, that's the second time. And then before I go to bed or whatever. So, but sometimes there comes that point where, like, especially that one period where I'm coming home from work and I'm in dire need of a shower, but I also need to take a shit. And I wonder, like, damn, okay, should I take this shit first and then jump in the shower? Or do I jump in the shower real quick, clean up, and then take this shit? Because either way, it's going to happen. It's just, what's the order in which they're supposed to happen? You know, like, what's the order in which I'm supposed to do this where it's not counterintuitive to my cleanliness? So, I mean, if any of you guys have any input on that, please let me know. But, yeah, man, I've been wondering about that, man. Especially like that moment when I come home from work and I know I need a shower, but I also have this crushing need to go. So, if any of you also are having this dilemma, man, please let me know, man. But yeah, that was just some random ass shit that just came out of my head, man. Another thing too, I want to talk about whether or not black people are naturally conspiracy theorists. And I bring this up because I mean, of course, you know, we've gone over things like Area 51. We talk a lot about the Illuminati. We talk about the Illuminati's connection to hip hop. I've even got a video series on YouTube speaking about Freemasonry, hip hop, and devil worship and things of that nature, and the propensity that people have to make connections where they're not necessarily are connections to be made. And like right now, I'm kind of wondering whether or not it's just something that's ingrained in our people. And I say that because of this, you know, and this has something to do with my work. Okay. When I go to work, what we're typically doing is we are moving gas meters from inside of the home to the outside of the home. And we're pretty much giving them a full service renewal, a new gas line from the gas main all the way up to the home to the gas meter. And we do new fuel lines, the whole shebang. They get pretty much a brand new service. Okay. And I get a lot of questions a lot of times from the customers when we're at their home, and it's a lot of, when we up, it's about 10 guys. We got about 8 trucks with heavy equipment, heavy machinery. We pulling out these big ass drills and everything else. We got a lot of stuff going on, and people want to know, okay, exactly why are you guys, you know, why are you guys doing this, and why are you doing it now? And so what I ended up, you know, I've almost created a spiel. I've got this damn speech that I tell these people because I get the question so much. And what typically I end up telling them is, you know, pretty much that the piping in the ground is pretty old. A lot of the pipe has been in the ground damn near 100 years, or from the time this house was built, this pipe has been in the ground. And some of it's old metal, some of it is corroding, some of it is leaking. And what you don't want are just perpetual gas leaks. You don't want a leak. I mean, that's just something you don't want. It's unsafe. Put it to you that way. It's very unsafe. And so what we're doing pretty much is upgrading the system so that you don't have this old pipe in the ground, so that you know, it's more safe to operate you know, the gas service, the distribution and the delivery of the gas service to your home. And not only that, with the gas meters being outside, it makes it a lot easier for the meter reader to come by to read your meter, and you get an accurate read. Now, I used to be a meter reader, and there were times where you go to a house and they have the gas meter inside, and there's this little sensor that's on the side of the house that you put a wind up to it, and it's supposed to give you the read from the gas meter on the inside of the house. Now, I can tell you right now that there were quite a few times where that sensor didn't work. Okay? The sensor didn't work. And there were a number of reasons why the sensor didn't work. Sometimes people would actually cut the wire that leads to their meter, and they would think that we're doing that. By doing that, that they were somehow going to lower their energy cost, or they're going to lower their gas bill. So I'm going to cut this wire, not knowing that, okay, they just made it so that the gas company is just going to guess how much gas you used, as opposed to the actual amount of gas that you used. And, you know, sometimes those sensors didn't work. Okay. And you would much rather a meter reader be able to get an actual read than to put it in the system that he wasn't able to get in, you know, get a read, and then he'd have to state why he couldn't get a read. But for whatever reason, they have this formula that the company uses to guess how much gas you probably used in this, you know, in this time frame for the month. Okay. So I would tell them, you know, there's that aspect. Okay, then for whatever reason, should it be for a past due balance, or should it be for an emergency situation, the gas company would have access to the meter so that they can shut it off if need be. Okay, whether that be for collections or whether that be for an emergency situation. And this is where everything I just said went completely out the window. Because the minute you tell people that it gives them greater access to shut the services off, that's all they heard me say. Everything I've said about the old pipe in the ground doesn't matter anymore. Everything I've said about fixing gas leaks doesn't matter anymore. Everything I've said about them even being accurately billed doesn't matter anymore. All they heard me say was it gives us greater opportunity to shut it off. Okay? And I get this, again, I get that question a lot from, you know, customers. And Detroit, being that it's a, you know, it's a primarily African American city still, even with the dwindling of population. And unfortunately, even people that are, you know, when you go to their home, you can guess whether or not they're able to pay the bill or not. Unfortunately, even these people that, you know, the first thing they say is, well, this is just so you guys can come out here and cut it off. And I always wonder, like, why is that, you know, the first thing that you know, that people think about is that is their services being cut off? Why is that the first thing that comes up? Now, mind you, I've been in a position to where I've had my utilities cut off. It's not a nice thing. It's the fucking worst. I remember my gas being cut off and having to warm up my water in the microwave. I remember shit like that, you know, just to have warm or hot water and having to get a hot plate and try to warm some water up so that I would be able to at least wash my ass. I was on my knuckles that hard. Okay, so I can remember, and I can empathize with people who are dealing with that type of situation. But I've always wondered why that was the first thing that a lot of my people tend to ask focus and think about, whether it was this vast conspiracy by the gas company to come out here and shut off their utilities. And one of the things, I guess, because I've been able to kind of move up a little bit in the 5 years that I've been with my company, I've been promoted 3 times, and I've been able to see how different aspects of the job affect another aspect of the job. And I can understand how things are the way they are. Now, before I was actually an employee of the company, I was a contractor. I started out doing shutoffs. I was the shutoff guy. I cut people's stuff off, the lights and the gas. And one of the things that I would get when I was a shutoff man was, you know, I know somebody whose bill is $6,000, but you over here right now messing with me for my $700. Why you don't go over to the $6,000 person and cut they shit off? I would get that a lot. And part of the reason why a lot of the people were able to get away with getting their bills up so high was because, guess what? The company didn't have access to those meters. Okay? So it was a lot more cost effective to send me, the field collector guy, to shut it off, as opposed to sending the distribution crew to the residents, dig up the front yard, expose the main, and cut and cap that service. It's a whole lot more money involved when you think about the equipment, the manpower, and the amount of money that you have to pay these guys to do it. So it was one of those things where it was more cost effective for them to send me. All right. So you wouldn't send a crew like that to a house that only owed $400 or $500. But a crew that owed, you know, to somebody that owed maybe $6,000 or $7,000, yeah, you would probably send that crew out there to go cut them off. Okay? But part of the reason was because when they would send guys like me to go cut it off, they weren't, you know, people aren't gonna let you in the house to come cut their shit off. I mean, I had to bargain my way into a lot of people's homes in order to perform my job. You know, like, you know what? Look here, this is what I'm gonna do for you. If you let me in here to cut this gas off, I'll leave your lights on till you can figure out what you're gonna do. You know, till you can figure out something to where you can come up with a payment plan or something to figure out, you know, what your options are. But mind you, I can't guarantee it's gonna be on for long. Now, part of the reason I would do that was because I had numbers to hit. You know, I had to maintain my productivity while out doing the job. Now, and that was another thing too. Like, people would, you know, threaten me with bodily harm and things of that nature. It's like, look, I don't know you. It's nothing personal to me. I have no reason to come here and harass you or anything else like that. I just have a job to do. And if you let me do my job, I can show you some compassion. I can help in the best way that I can while at the same time doing my job. And so I was able to talk my way into a lot of houses just by offering them that one little caveat. Like, you know what? If you let me cut off this gas, You would much rather me cut off the gas than for me to cut off these lights, because without the electricity, you don't have a refrigerator, you don't have a TV, you gotta be asleep at about 4 or 5 o'clock in the evening because it's dark in Michigan in the wintertime around that time. And, you know, life is a whole lot more bleak without lights. You could probably survive without this gas. You can buy space heaters and stuff like that without this gas. But without these lights, it's a lot more bleak. And when I would tell, you know, I would explain it to people like that, they would understand. But, but getting back to my original point, though. When I was doing that, that was part of the reason why, we want to move meters from inside of the home outside, so that you don't have a bill that balloons up to $6,000-$7,000 before someone comes out to cut it off. Or, and you're wondering why the gas company doesn't have these people cut off, but you're getting harassed, or so you think you're being harassed for $500 or $600. And you know, I would see a whole lot of crazy stuff, man. I'll never forget, there was this one couple. They lived in the Boston Edison district of Detroit. I'll never forget this guy. He had on, I knock on the door and he has on this, this diamond necklace. I mean, diamonds just dripping off of his neck. Right. And I tell him why I'm there. You know, it's like, look, dude, I'm here to cut the, you know, the gas and the electric services off for non-payment. And this guy tells me that the state was going to help him pay it. That he's waiting on the county and the state. He's waiting on public assistance to help him pay this bill. And I'm looking at his chain like, dude, seriously, you could pawn that chain and pay your shit right now. This is how I'm looking at him. Like, are you serious? You know? And so he calls his girlfriend. He says, he's telling his girlfriend that, you know, the gas company is here. They're coming to cut everything off and everything else. Also, a point of description that I forgot to tell you guys was that this house was pretty much a baby mansion. If you've ever been to Detroit, anybody who's ever been to Detroit, a lot of the houses over in the Boston Edison district are pretty huge. There's some big historical homes over in the Boston Edison district. So the house was, you know, it was a pretty nice sized house. He also had a Mercedes in the driveway with 20s on it. So he wasn't exactly a broke guy. He could have paid this bill. So he calls his girl, and his girl is on her way. Now, as he's on the phone with her, and I'm telling him, look, dude, you know, I'm not really giving him the sympathy or the benefit of the doubt simply because I'm looking at the assets that he has to pay this bill. When there are a lot of people that don't have the assets to pay the bill, and I have to reluctantly cut them off because they, you know, they got kids in the house and everything else. And hell, I'm not a hard-hearted guy, nothing like that. Hell, I've been in this situation before myself, so I understand it. But when you have the means to do it and you just choose not to, and on top of that, you want to use, you know, public assistance to help, like, get the fuck out of here. So I'm on my way to the backyard. I cut the lights off. By the time I cut the lights out, his girlfriend pulls up in another Mercedes Benz. And she's hooping and hollering. She's like, man, fuck you. Fuck you. You could have went to somebody else's house. You could have cut down my, why you fucking with us? And the only thing I could say, even though it was probably the dick move to do, but I could just say, you know what? That's a really nice car. That's a really nice car. You got two Mercedes on dubs. He's dripping in diamonds. You got a really nice house, and y'all refuse to pay the bill because you think that you can game the system into letting public assistance pay for what you have generated. I was pretty pissed at that, you know, and that was one of the instances, you know, where I felt justified in doing my job. Like, this is some bullshit right here. But getting back to the whole conspiracy theorist thing, man, I honestly don't think, when we talk about whether or not the gas company just simply wants to cut people off, it's one of those things to where I don't think they realize that, yeah, the gas company, even though you're required to have some type of utility service in your home in order for your home to be livable, no, the shit's not free. And the gas company is a for-profit company. And not only that, they are providing a service. Now, you being cut off of your gas doesn't really help the gas company that much. And I don't think people really take heed or understand that. I don't think they don't understand that, you know, they would much rather you be able to pay your bill and generate revenue at that particular residence. That's pretty much what it's all about. Generating revenue. If you're at home and you're using gas service and you're able to pay your bill, the gas company is more than happy to take your money and continue to take your money. So long as you're paying the bill, you got no problems. It's when you don't pay the bill that you tend to have problems. Now, because it's regulated that, you know, the vast majority of homes have to have some form of either gas or electric utility, you know, you know, a lot of people just are like, well, shit, if I don't have gas, I can't have my home and everything else. And yeah, unfortunately, that's true. But it's one of those things to where I don't think people really understand that, yeah, you got to pay the bill. And unfortunately, us moving the meters outside is a part of that. But it also is more than just us cutting it off. It also goes back right back into what I was saying before about, you know, the safety of the services, the safety of it being delivered, and accurate billing. And so the conspiracy that we tend to have about the utility company, I think, is a bit, I don't know, I guess it's a bit short-sighted. And I'm surprised I talked that long about fucking the conspiracy theories of black people when it comes to the gas company. But, I guess it's just one of those things, man, because I deal with it on a day-to-day basis. And, I mean, I'm pretty sure. I mean, I got stories upon stories that I can tell you guys about what I see at work. Some of it's good. Some of it's fucking horrible. When you look at some of the living conditions and things of that nature of the homes that people are living in. But, you know, at the end of the day, man, it's a job. I like my job. I think this is the first time I can say that I work for, you know, I'm actually happy in what I'm doing. Maybe the fact that I'm getting paid well helps with that particular situation, but I actually enjoy what I'm doing. I come home every day. The key is to come home the same way I left, and that's all in one piece. And I try my damnedest to do that. But also, speaking about my job, and this is a different aspect of it, I was watching Real Time with Bill Maher not too long ago. It was about maybe a month and a half ago. And he had the guy, I believe his name was Mike Rowe. Now, if any of you guys know who Mike Rowe is, he's the guy that hosts the show Dirty Jobs, where he goes and he'll do a job where, like, say, there'll be sewer line. There'll be sewer workers. He'll work in the sewers. Or someone who deals with like working with animals, like compost or fertilizer, things like that. He'll go and he'll you know, highlight these dirty jobs and the pride that these people take in the jobs that they do. My job hasn't been one of those jobs that he's performed. I don't think. I haven't watched the show that religiously. I haven't watched the show much at all. But I remember him talking on Real Time with Bill Maher about there being I think he said something to the effect that there were like 3 million jobs that are open in the United States right now, and the only reason that those jobs aren't being filled are because people simply don't want them or they don't have the skills for them. And it's part of the he asked the question of whether or not the work smart not hard was the worst advice to be given. Something to that effect. And he was talking about, you know, how there was all of these well-paying dirty jobs that nobody simply wanted because of the, I guess, the reputation that comes along with that. And it made me think about how I was when I was in high school. And like I had my Uncle Billy. Now, my Uncle Billy was like a jack of all trades and shit. Uncle Billy knew how to cook. Uncle Billy knew how to cut hair. Uncle Billy was a carpenter. Uncle Billy knew how to, you know, do plumbing work. You know, he knew how to work on cars. He was fucking mechanic. He knew how to do a whole bunch of shit. And I remember in high school, I kind of had this smug attitude about the things that he was doing. Like, you know, when I graduate from college, I'm not going to have to do none of this shit. I'm going to be able to pay somebody else to do this shit for me. I'm not going to have to do none of this type of stuff. He would try to show me a lot of the different things that he was doing just so that I would absorb it through osmosis a lot of times, you know. And, you know, my attitude as a kid, or when I was like 17, 18 years old, I just wasn't really trying to hear it. I wasn't even trying to think about being in somebody's house where they got like old, moldy, dank, rust. I mean, just like just chicken just sitting on the counter, just like spoiling. I wasn't trying to think about doing anything like that. I wasn't trying to think about working in anybody's basement where they had a flood down in the basement and they hadn't, they hadn't cleaned up the feces and the urine and everything else that was going on with the sewage that had been pumped into the basement. I wasn't thinking about working in any of those type of conditions. At 17 or 18 years old, I would have told you, motherfucker, I done went to college. I got a college degree. I'm going to pay somebody else to work on that for me. That was my attitude then. And so to see what I'm doing now, where I'm actually working in a lot of conditions such as that, where I go into a basement and there's a bunch of spider webs all over the place. There's dogs in the basement where the dogs have pooped on the floor right next to the water heater that I have to relight. Just things like that. And I never saw myself doing this type of work. And I always wondered, like, damn, you know, when I went to school, like, the only thing I think that school really did for me as far as when I went to Tennessee State and stuff like that, because I went to Tennessee State University and also went to Westwood College of Technology. And the things that I think about as far as, like, my degrees or what I went to school for was concerned, like, I'm not doing anything that has anything relative to do with what I went to school for. Like, I went to school to pursue, I think I was an English major when I went to Tennessee State, and I was thinking about going into law school. No, I'm not doing anything remotely in that field. When I went to Westwood College of Technology, I was studying graphic design and multimedia. Well, I guess I'm pretty much kind of using that now, doing this here, but this doesn't make me any money. This is just a hobby of mine. And everything that they taught me at Westwood College of Technology was shit that I had already taught myself as far as learning how to create web pages and stuff like that. I was more like into web design and stuff like that. And I had already taught myself HTML and Dreamweaver and Firefox and not Firefox, Fireworks. It was a Macromedia design software studio that I had bought at Tennessee State, ironically. So I had already taught myself a lot of the things that they were trying to teach me. And I paid to go to school there, and I'm still paying to go to school I'm still paying off those student loans. So Mike Rowe was talking about how a lot of colleges use that propaganda to generate higher college enrollments. And now we have this employment gap of 3 million well-paying jobs where no one really either has the skill or the desire to do them simply because they are dirty jobs. And it was funny, man, because there was this one kid, man, I was at work. I say kid, but the guy, he looked maybe 25 or something like that. I'm at work and we just finished a service renewal, and sweeping up the dirt. You know, we have to, you know, clean up after ourselves. So I'm sweeping up the dirt, putting it back in the hole. And this guy, man, he's just standing there, he's watching me, and he just kind of stands there for a minute, and he's eating on some chips. And then he's just like, as he's walking away, he's like, man, ain't no way they can't pay me enough money to do that shit. And I'm looking at this dude like, you know, well, you don't I'm an asshole, man. Y'all know me. I'm a bit of an asshole, and I'm saying this to myself, but I'm like, looking at you, dude, it's not as if people can pay you to do much of anything. You don't look like you have that much ambition to do much of anything as you walk down the street aimlessly at 12 o'clock in the afternoon with a bag of chips. You don't look like you got a whole lot going on. And not only that, I mean, I could tell you how much I get paid, but you know, I don't want to, it's really not that type of deal, man. I'm not trying to argue with guys out there, man. And, you know, I'm much more willing to talk to guys that are coming up to me like, yo, man, are y'all hiring? You know, I like talking to those cats, man. You know, I've had people come up to me like they're just amazed that I'm a brother doing what I do. You know, because for a long time, I mean, there's a lot of brothers in my station, but, you know, typically you don't find a lot of black guys doing this for whatever reason. I mean, I don't know. But, yeah, I've had people talk, you know, tell me how proud they was just to see me out here doing what I'm doing. I've had my family tell me they're so proud of me because of what I'm doing, because nobody saw me doing this shit. I didn't see me doing this shit 7-8 years ago. So, yeah, man, it's just... Is one of those things to where I wonder whether or not, you know, we devalue hard work because we've been told for so long it's better to work smart, not hard, where you can actually work both smart and hard. They don't necessarily have to be mutually exclusive, so to speak, man. So I wonder how many of you guys feel that way. Like, how many of you guys are working in positions where you didn't think that this would be something that you was doing, you would be doing in life, but it's something that you enjoy doing. Like, you work in a job that you enjoy doing, it pays well, and you never saw yourself doing it. So yeah, get back to me on that, man. But before I get ready to wrap this shit up, man, I got some feedback. I got a couple emails from some listeners who listened to the last episode, and I appreciate anybody that takes the time out to send me some feedback, man. Again, the way you can get to me here at the Span Report, it's more than a few ways to get to me at the Span Report, but if you want to send me any type of feedback to the show, man, hit me up at the Span Podcast. That's the Span Podcast, all one word, at gmail.com. Send me an email that way. Or you can hit me up at the Span Report hotline at area code 313-288-0485. You can leave me a voicemail message there. I'll replay those voicemails on the show, and I'll respond to you right here on the show. That number again is area code 313-288-0485. You can also hit me up on the Span Pod, not the Span Podcast. Excuse me, the Mr. Span fan page over on Facebook. That's Mr.Span. Again, like I said, if you guys listen to the show, you pretty much know how to spell my name by this point. Also, you can hit me up on Twitter, and my name there is the same as it is everywhere. It's Mr._Span. So hit me up on Twitter. And of course, you can also go to the spanreport.com, and you can leave whatever feedback you want on the episodes. On the episodes page, because every podcast is available on thespanreport.com. There's also a comment section there. You can actually use your Facebook your Facebook account to leave comments on thespanreport.com. But let me get to these emails real quick, and let me respond to these real right here. I got one from Wilson G. And Wilson says, Mr. Span, I would like to say it's good to hear you back. It's been a long time, and hopefully you can keep cranking out shows, because I really think people need to hear your views on a range of topics. But I must say that I disagree with you when it comes to unions. I'm an auto worker in Alabama, and we don't have a union in my plant, and I don't really see the need of having one. And because of it, more auto companies are bringing well-paying jobs to the South. I like the money and the benefits I make while not giving a union anything. So basically, I'm asking, how do you reconcile that with your strong union support? Again, glad to hear that you're back, but I'd like to hear your response on this. Thanks, Wilson. Okay. Well, see, here's the thing. When it comes to, from what I know of the situation, when it comes to auto plants in the South, like, the vast majority of them are from foreign automakers. Like, Hyundai makes a lot of cars here in the United States now. I think Kia makes some of their cars here in the United States. And they've based a lot of them in the South. What you have to understand, too, is, like, the cost of livings are different depending on which region of the, you know, which region of the country you live in. So what you make in the South might not necessarily be, you know, that great, save for someone who lives in California, or someone who lives in New York. Or, unfortunately, even though Detroit ain't the shit, somebody who lives up north in the city like Detroit or Chicago, the cost of living is different. So, you know, you have that aspect. Also, part of the reason that a lot of these auto companies that that are opening plants in the South, and you know, you guys in the South aren't unionized, part of the reason that they have to offer you guys wages like that and benefits like that is to compete. They have to compete for workers. Now, if Chevy or if Ford or of Chrysler came down to the South to offer you employment, and they also had the UAW, which is the United Auto Workers Union, you know, moving in or whatever, they'd have to offer you benefits comparable to a lot of what the union union workers get. Now, mind you, typically what union workers get are union workers tend to be better compensated when it comes to the amount of money that they get paid, when it comes to the amount of benefits that they are afforded, when it comes to like health benefits and like health, life insurance, dental and vision insurance, things of that nature. So, I mean, if you don't want to join a union, I'm fine with that. And that's the thing that I think a lot of people tend to not get. Especially when I was having that discussion with the guy on YouTube, was like, look, dude, I'm fine with you not having, you know, not working in a union. That doesn't concern me. The only thing I was talking about was when it came to right to work, that they specifically tried to make it to where people can work in union shops and not join the union and get the same benefits of the union. And that's the issue, that you don't have to pay into this, but you getting everything that they getting and they paid into it. And, you know, that's an issue. I mean, part of it, I mean, really the whole right to work movement is more so union busting than anything. They're just trying to bust up the union. And you have to wonder why politicians would be so interested in you not being able to collectively bargain and you not being able to have a collective bargaining agreement that benefits or looks out for your interest. Because corporations are, of course, going to look out for their interests and they're going to look out for their bottom line. But you as a worker all should also be afforded the right to have your well-being looked after. And you elect your union membership, leadership, and things of that nature. And you elect whether or not, you know, you choose how active in the union you are. So when it comes to unions, yeah, I mean, pretty much. I mean, there are people that, you know, that work in the industry and don't work in a union, and they're happy. And I'm happy for them for being happy. The only issue that I had was for those who want to work in union shops and not pay union dues and receive the same wages and benefits and perks that the union negotiated for its members. That's the only beef that I had with right to work, man. But I appreciate you you reaching out to me, Wilson, and I really look forward to hearing from you again soon, man. Real talk. I got another email here from Tanisha. Okay. And Tanisha says, Mr. Spann, I just listened to your last episode, and I gotta say, I'm disappointed in your support of stand your ground laws. George Zimmerman should be in jail right now, and stand your ground laws are the reason he's walking the streets free to kill again. Your fixation on guns is borderline troubling too. You said you have a daughter. I hope that one day your guns don't end up taking her life because you think having a gun makes you safe. Although I agree with you on some things, this is one thing you are 100% wrong about. Sincerely, Tanisha. Okay. Okay, first of all, Tanisha, I agree with you that George Zimmerman should be in jail right now. And I said that on the last show, that I believe that George Zimmerman should be locked up. I also said that I don't believe that George Zimmerman should have been able to apply stand your ground in his defense, simply because George Zimmerman pursued Trayvon Martin. Trayvon Martin had more of a right to stand his ground than George Zimmerman did. Unfortunately, Trayvon Martin isn't here to give his side of the story. Not only that, when I talked about the short-sightedness of boycotting states that have stand your ground laws, I think the funny thing about it is, like, so many people were talking about boycotting Florida, not realizing that they lived in states that also had stand your ground statutes as well. Again, like I said, it's 26 states in the union. Half the country has stand your ground statutes. Half the country has castle laws, where your home is your castle. You can defend your castle type deal. So I think more so than anything, it was an ignorance as to the application of the law and people's understanding of what the law meant, you know, and it varies from state to state. So you're not expected to know the law in each and every state, of course, I guess, unless you're a lawyer. And I'm not a lawyer, but I just disagree with the fact that people were so willing to jump on the abolition of stand your ground, not understanding that very few cases that have anything to do with stand your ground had any were interracial. where there was a black person and a white person involved in the altercation. More often than not, the stand your ground statute was applied to people who looked just like each other. If you were a black person, you ended up shooting another black person, then they invoked stand your ground. That was also used in court. When you're a white person and another white person shot somebody and they were in court about stand your ground. So you had more instances like that as opposed to the one instance that everybody heard about, which was George Zimmerman and Trayvon Martin. Now, again, I believe George Zimmerman should be locked the fuck up and the Booty Warrior should be going to town on his ass. That's what I believe. I don't believe that he should have been able to apply stand your ground. Now, again, like I said in episode 21, I said, you know, my view on it was a bit different from everybody else. I wasn't expecting everybody to agree with me, and you may still disagree with me, and that's perfectly fine. That's perfectly fine. I ain't got no beef with you because of that. But just understand my position. You know, that's the only thing. Just understand where I'm coming from. Understand my perspective. Also, you said something about I got a fixation on guns, and there may be some truth to that. I don't know. I mean, I do keep guns around. I don't necessarily know if it's a fixation or not. I just believe that I want to be prepared should anything happen that threatens the life of me and mine. Now, you know, my daughter doesn't live with me. As much as I would like for that to be different, she doesn't live with me. But even when she's here, she doesn't know where my guns are. And she probably won't know where my guns are because I don't really I don't have my guns out and about while my daughter's here. And even when I do have a gun out, it's not necessarily out. It's on my person concealed. She doesn't even know I have it. So, you know, I'm very much aware of the responsibility that I have by being a gun owner and trying to safely apply or safely exercise my Second Amendment rights. I'm very much aware of the responsibility that I've taken on. And yeah, I hope that my guns aren't used to have my daughter killed too. That would be really fucked up. And that would kill my soul if that were to happen, to where my guns were responsible for the death of my daughter. So I take precautions to make sure that type of shit doesn't happen. I appreciate your concern though. I do appreciate your concern. But yeah, we just on this particular issue, I guess we could just agree to disagree. And again, like I said, man, that's perfectly fine. All right, thank you for reaching out, Tanisha, and I do hope to hear from you again. I really do. Thank you so much for reaching out. And this last email I got was from a guy named Reggie, and Reggie just says, "What's up, Mr. Span? Glad to hear you back in the game. I just wanted to ask you what setup you use to produce your show. Thanks in advance, Reggie." What I use Mixcraft. That's what I use to produce my show. Part of the reason I use Mixcraft is because I can not only just produce the audio, but I can also do videos with Mixcraft as well. So when I want to put snippets of the show on YouTube, or if I actually want to put the entire podcast on YouTube, I can do that in one program with Mixcraft. Also, the mic that I use a Blue Yeti mic, and you can get Blue Yeti. I got this at Best Buy for I think it was like $139 at the time that I got it. You might be able to catch it. I think it was $139. Blue Yeti, and I use a HP TouchSmart NV20 PC. Yeah, that's pretty much my setup, man. It's not that much more elaborate than that. I do have a laptop that has like you know, a lot of the older sound files and stuff like that I use for the older shows. And I used to use an app called, well, I call it an app, but a program called Propaganda. I used to use Propaganda, but I'm really learning and loving this. Well, it's not necessarily simple, but I'm loving the tools that are available to me on Mixcraft, man. It's a really good audio production software, And yeah, I would recommend it, man. So check out Mixcraft if you can get it free to try on downloads.com. Or you can go to Mixcraft, I think it's Acoustica, I think is the company. You can go to their website and you can buy the software for about $60. So it's not a whole lot of money, man. It's not a whole lot of money for my setup. You know, it's pretty much straightforward. I just like being able to just turn on my computer and use it now. Whereas before, it was a lot more complicated process. I used to use Audacity. But Audacity on Windows would crash a lot. And I'm using a Windows PC. I know a lot of people use Macs. You know, I'm not a real big Apple fan like that. But yeah, that's my setup, man. But yeah, so that's going to be it for today's show, guys. Again, hopefully I can put out another show next week. Yeah, but again, if you guys want to get in touch with me here at the Span Report, man, check out the Mr. Span fan page. Go to thespanreport.com. Leave your comments, you know, on any of the episodes there. Check me out on YouTube. That's the Span TV channel on YouTube. You can hit me up on Twitter at Mr. Span, Mr. _ Span. I'm on Instagram, same name. So yeah, man, I'm going to pretty much shut it down right here. I hope to hear from you guys soon, and I can't wait to talk to you guys again soon. So until next time, fam, peace.
do decide that you might